Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're going on a 1 month to go in the regular season, just a month after these weekend games. And here we are recording on Friday, August the 29th. I'm here with the one and only, one of the best players in the game, the originator of the Drops and Disasters column, which has been, I don't know about international favorite, but we do have some international clients. But yeah, I mean, I've seen other sites do it, so which is cool. Mike, you were the very first one, but yep, I spoiled it. There he is. Ladies and gentlemen, at Bronx Yankees 23, Mike Mager. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Vlad. Thanks. Yeah, I don't know about international reach, but it was definitely a great idea of yours to come up with that column. And yeah, it's been fun to do so far. Can't believe it. We're down to the final month, you know, four more fab periods, and it's crunch time.
You know, I think people might have a misconception that we love fab. But, you know, I think there's an element of like, we like it. I don't know about love is a strong word, more maybe than a lot of people. I know there's a spectrum to that. I know there are a lot of people that hate it. But it is kind of like a thing where it's, I don't know if it's more fun earlier in the season, right? I feel like, and there's like a curve, right? A bell curve, because it feels more like of a struggle in the middle of the season. And I feel like it gets a little bit easier now because you're competing against less people. You have less funds. The options are sometimes, you know, kind of straightforward. How do you feel about that whole thing?
Yeah, pretty much the same way. I mean, I generally enjoy doing fab, but I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a grind at certain times of the year. It's a long season. Definitely feel like, you know, the options that are really appealing are fewer these days. You know, we're still getting some interesting call-ups, and we'll talk about some today. But for the most part, a lot of the players are just, you know, kind of injury stashes or some guys who, you know, are weekly or partial weekly fill-ins, and, you know, not something to get excited about. And yeah, it gets a little easier, I think, you know, sometimes with a big bid, you know, like last week, Shane Bieber coming out, you know, if he came out 3 months earlier, you know, you'd be wondering, you know, do I go over 100? Do I go over 200 and stuff? But when you have $20 left, your options are a lot more limited. So it's, I find myself spending kind of less time on how much to bid and just spending a lot of time on the ranking of my bids. You know, I'm now for not all my leagues, but some of my leagues, I'm really pretty low in funds, and I'm not expecting to get my top choices. So it's, you know, maybe now more than ever, it's really important who you rank fifth, sixth, and seventh in a long string.
Yeah, I mean, this past weekend, I remember having a lot of thought about, you know, I would really like to get Samuel Basayo on one of my really good teams here, but I have the hammer in a competitive main event. You know, I have a good first catcher. My second catcher was Kyle Higashioka, who actually I don't hate. And so this was a weekend where Basayo was available, Gabby Moreno, and even Kyle Teal was available in this league. And I was like, okay, I'll go for it. I think I had maybe 120 left. And I think I put in like a keep him honest on Basayo, and then like five on Moreno. I think maybe like a little more on Teal, 15. Anyways, I got Basayo, and you know, he hasn't had a hit so far. And I believe Higashioka had a home run and five RBIs in one game. You know, that's streaky bastard.
Yeah, isn't that the worst? Yeah, you just never know. I mean, I'd like to think everything I've read about him, he'll be the better option for the final month. But for any given week, it's potluck, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, how are you doing with your teams this year? Like just your overall season, and obviously you've had some real monster seasons over the last couple, but how's this season going? Give us a quick summary.
It's going pretty well, but not in all respects. My biggest league by far is the Platinum League, and I'm currently in second place. So that can be very profitable, but it's been a really tough league, and I just can't get close enough to the leader, Clark Olsen, who's just crushing the league. So I'm still trying to get a little closer to him while also making sure I stay in second. I don't fall back any further. Very pleased on the auction front. I'm currently in the lead for the auction championship overall, which would be So it'd be kind of cool to repeat in that contest. I'm also really excited. A team I share with Mark Winoker is in second overall in that league in the contest. So two really good auction teams, and we'll see how the last 4 weeks go. Hopefully, you know, they'll finish 1-2 in some order. And I think I'm 18th overall in the main with one good main. I have another one that's competitive in fourth place trying to get into the money, and one that's kind of lagging that's going to, you know, not finish well. On the downside, it's been a horrible year for me in draft champions leagues. I'm usually pretty profitable in those leagues, and I'm just getting hammered. I don't know what I did wrong, but I'm going to have to revisit my process in the off season, because I'm just having a horrible season with respect to my draft champions teams. But so some very good stuff and some bad stuff.
And just to kind of summarize that for everybody, Mike is crushing it again. So yes, that's the top two teams in the online auction. Possibly a huge casting spot in the 15K entry platinum, a main event that's, you know, casually in 18th overall in first place in the league. So yeah, that's pretty good. I noticed that the auction that you have in first overall, and this is of course out of nearly 200 teams, is a 2,500, and this is the one that happened in New Jersey, right?
Yep.
The MTM.
Yeah, I mean the whole weekend MTM helped organize, but there were two auctions out in Jersey, a 1600 and 2500, and they were both the same day. So I just did one of them. I did the 2500, and so far that team's doing really well, but still got a ways to go.
Thank you, Ramon Laureano and Trevor Story. Just got Yordan Alvarez back, by the way. Yordan is back.
Yes. How do you feel? I feel good. Yeah, no, this was a funny kind of team to manage. I a lot of my picks were not, a lot of my big dollar picks didn't work out. Yordan was, I stashed him pretty much all year. I stashed Blake Snell pretty much all year. And I had to manage a bunch of injuries, but now I'm getting everyone back and healthy. And so it's good. I'm hoping to continue that.
Let's run through some of these guys. So Yordan Alvarez is back. I wanted to ask, this offense is clicking. I actually have one of my other mains, another one that's trying to get into placing. I think it's got like 90 points. It's had a Houston stack for a good chunk of the season. Just a mini stack. It was Altuve, Christian Walker, and Paredes. Not by design. Of course, Walker had the slow start to the season. Now Paredes has been out for quite some time. Altuve has been, by some was declared a bust, or just somebody that, you know, before the season started, like, people weren't really into him, but he's having a very nice season. And yes, the pitching's been all over the place, but they just got Yordan back. They've got a couple games up on the Mariners, if I'm not mistaken. Both teams should get into the playoffs, but how do you feel about this team? Do they have enough depth of pitching? And what do you expect from Yordan for the final month of the year?
I'm just hoping for health from Yordan. I mean, I think we know what he is. If he's healthy and playing well, he's a four-category monster, and, you know, should combine power with average. I think the lineup is on the upswing for Houston. Christian Walker, who you have, seems to be hitting better as of late. He's on a nice little run the last couple of weeks. Correa, you know, helps fill in for the Paredes injury. They may get Paredes back late in the season. He's trying to come back from what I read. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but I know Jake Myers is on a start of rehab, I think. So he may be coming back. I think the lineup's getting deeper, and it's a good lineup. And, you know, considering how many injuries this team has had, they've done a remarkable job, you know, getting to first place in their division. I think the main concerns I have with them for a long playoff run is really on the pitching side. I You know, they have Hunter Green and Framber Valdez is a fantastic one too.
Brown, the other color. Sorry.
What's that?
Hunter Brown, not Green. The other color.
Yeah. Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez are a great one too, but yeah, I don't know what they're going to continue to get in the, you know, in terms of the playoffs from Jason Alexander, Christian Javier, Spencer Arrighetti. Just not sure what you have with them. And then the bullpen's not quite as deep without Hader. So, I mean, I think I really like Abreu as a closer, but I'm not, you know, the path to get to him is now weaker. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess, you know, they'll go Brown, Framber, and pray for rain. But it's a good lineup. I mean, I think they're competitive with any other American League team for sure.
To me, it seemed like the Astros already had a strong lineup to begin with. You add Yordan to it, it's great. But I really like the additions they made at the trade deadline, because that's around the time Jeremy Peña was coming back, and they got Carlos Correa back, and he's been absolutely solid, hitting second, third most of the time. And then Jesus Sanchez, I thought, was a steal of a deal. Happened to work out at a time when Cam Smith was starting to cool off. So you're right on the pitching side. I mean, you know, they've got their almost 33-year-old veteran Jason Alexander's pitching well right now. How long will that last? Luis Garcia is supposed to make his debut at some point here soon. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Lance McCullers, of course, to the bullpen. I don't know if that's good or bad. I think it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could probably still pitch effectively in shorter lengths. Yeah. He had some playoff experience, which is good compared to some of the others.
Yeah, never underestimate the Astros. So I think they can always, you know, get in there. Another team in that division that has been, it's been rough. It's been a really, really rough season. They fired their hitting coach, who used to be the hitting whisperer who helped save the San Francisco offense with that Brandon Crawford massive season. I think it was like 2021. Downey Ecker, he's gone. And they've just had injury after injury after injury. Wyatt Langford had a slow, I don't think, month and a half span. You had Jake Berger off and on the IL. Adolis Garcia, kind of an offseason. He's been on the IL. Marcus Semien, now he's out essentially for the remainder of the season. Jonah Heim having all sorts of, you know, issues like bad body language on the team, some bad rumors, things like that. But now Corey Seager, appendectomy. And all this is happening while the pitching has been solid. The pitching has been tremendous, though it has been falling apart a little bit. Like Jacob DeGrom has not been as ace-like. Patrick Corbin is, you know, back to, you know, Corbining as usual. And then Nathan Eovaldi, unfortunately, he is out on the IL long term.
Yeah, what a couple of weeks for Texas to lose Seager and Semien, Eovaldi. I think Evan Carter's now out for the season as well. I mean, there's just Berger's out. Yeah, there's only so much a, you know, a team can withstand. I think they'd struggle to make the playoffs even with, I guess with health, they'd have a decent shot making the playoffs. But now I think they're out of it. And but yeah, they have gotten good pitching this season.
What's funny is they like to just scoop up Seattle's, you know, not trash. These are humans, but you know what I mean, from a baseball perspective, right? So, you know, Rowdy Tellez now on the Rangers, and then now Dylan Moore, and Dylan Moore might actually get some playing time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the playing time plays out now. I saw, you know, Josh Smith, who's been playing all around, has gotten some time at second base. And they still have Ezekiel Duran, so it's not clear to me yet whether Dylan Moore is going to get a full-time run or just kind of take over the same weak side platoon he had in Seattle. I guess if the playing time is there, Moore could be an intriguing fab pickup for those managers looking for speed.
Yep. And then in other news, what else? I mean, nothing that all that exciting, right? We'll get to the exciting stuff, but just Luis Robert Jr. on the IL again. I don't know. What do you think? Another team, if he had been traded, that he could have avoided these injuries? I mean, I know that sounds kind of the stupid thing to say, but you know how, like, just, you know, butterfly effect, things go in a different direction when things are on the positive and the up and up. But things haven't been that bad in Chicago, right? Like, since the new Pope and Vaughn, they got rid of Vaughn, like, teams been crushing it.
Yeah, no, the hitters, it's been a much more formidable lineup the last several months. I don't know about Robert's health. I think his performance would likely be better on a better team, like just having something to play for and, you know, maybe not having to be the primary bat and just being in a more positive situation, I think would really make a difference. I mean, he has fantastic talent, but it's, you know, now it's 2 years in a row hitting under 225. He really picked up the base stealing this year, and I think he has real power if healthy. But he debuted in 2020, and the last 5 seasons, he played 68, 98, 145, 100, and 110 games. So, I mean, really, he's missed a substantial portion of 4 of the 5 last seasons. So that's a real risk if you're thinking about him for next season.
Yeah, I think the stock has definitely dropped. It was already kind of this season. We went back as far as November. We were several months before the season. We were talking about him as not somebody we love in the top 100 overall, just because of all the issues. And of course, we had bought in for that big season of his, and then backed off the following year because we know a player like that, and with the injury history, those type of things seem to kind of follow you wherever you go. Other news: Carlos Santana, the veteran, the Guardians, he's been released. And then in Arizona, obviously, you know, kind of an intriguing offense here. Not as intriguing as it was a month ago, but yeah. Beyond Ketel Marte and Corbin Carroll, Pavin Smith is now out. He's got a quad injury. He's on the IL. Tyler Locklear had him for a couple of weeks. Didn't work out too well. He's going to go back to a regular role. The guy I'm really looking forward to, and I don't know if this is just another Luis Robert Jr. situation because the guy does never stay healthy, but I can see him absolutely teasing us for the month of September and then getting hyped for next year, and that's Jordan Lawler. I've been, trying to get on that Lawler train, or I keep getting on and off of it all season, but he is back. He's been, 10 games since he came off a long-term IL stint in the minors. And in 10 games, decent results there, 50 plate appearances, hitting .280, a homer, 5 ribs, 2 stolen bases, decent walks and Ks. And we'll see because, he's got a role now, right? Because Eugenio Suarez is gone, Blaze Alexander, he's been pretty cold. I think he had maybe a 3-hit game the other day, but outside of that, he's hitting somewhere around 200. It's kind of more of a utility bat or maybe a short side platoon guy. And I would love Lawler to just come in there and just crush it for a month from the third base slot.
Yeah, no, it'd be nice to see. You talked about being on the Lawler train. I mean, I think I've seen that train coming down the tracks for a long time, and it hasn't hit the station yet. I don't know. I'm kind of at the point where I want to see it first. That's not to say he's not worth bidding on. I think he is worth bidding on just for the upside, but he's shown he can dominate the minors. I want to see him have some success in the majors. And I think, it's either poor performance or limited playing time, which kind of goes hand in hand. They really haven't done him a favor expecting him to hit when he's playing twice a week. But he always, seems to have trouble staying healthy, which is, that's a skill, the ability to be on the field when needed. So between the, the having really shown nothing at the major league level and the frequent injuries, I think that's 2 big question marks. I'd love to see him, if they're going to call him up soon, and I'm not really sure what they're waiting on, but if they're going to call him up soon, I hope it's to give him regular playing time, full time or very close, and see what they have in him. And of course, if he performs almost as well as he's done in the minors, then he'll be a popular commodity come draft season.
For the, the balance of the remainder of this pod, let's talk pitching, because we do talk a lot of hitting on this podcast, and there are a lot of exciting pitchers coming up this weekend in both as tonight. Prospects. Yeah, and today, tonight, yeah. As we record on Friday, prospects getting called up, old veterans, some of them with high draft capital, coming back. That includes Chris Sale and Pablo Lopez. Even Ryan Weathers, actually, in a couple of weeks, he may be back. So let's talk about some of those. I wrote an article a couple days ago, Gut Feelings, my weekly column, and I kind of looked at September starting pitchers. And of course, we know that the way things line up now, as far as, you know, two start weeks and who they're facing, that's all going to change for the most part for almost most of these guys. But I did do a fun little exercise. I sort of identified about 17 starting pitchers, all with roster percentage of 80% or under in 12 teamers, many of them available in 15 teamers as well. And some of them are, you know, the names that you may expect, like the Kyle Bradishes, who's at 0% rostered in all formats. And then the two guys coming up, Peyton Toll and Jonah Tong. But there are a whole bunch more there. So I wanted to kind of start there. You want to start at the top with Bradish?
Sure. He looked great in his first start. And I liked that they let him throw a decent amount of innings. I think that they may have a case where they want him to throw a lot of innings to kind of build him up for next season. For people who haven't seen Kyle Bradish in a while, he reminded folks that he can be an elite or near elite starting pitcher in this league. So I liked what I saw from him, and he would be, you know, kind of my top choice coming back. Other than, you know, I guess I want to see how the Braves use Chris Sale. Obviously he's an elite starter, and if he's fully healthy, he has unlimited upside for the remainder of the season. I'm just not sure yet how the Braves are going to use him. They just, you know, I'm sure he wants to get back on the mound. The Braves aren't playing for anything now. So I think they might treat him carefully, but we'll see. I'm really looking forward to the two prospects tonight. I confess I'm not a huge prospects guy. I don't play. I limit myself to redraft NFBC redraft league. So I don't play dynasty. I'm not that familiar with Peyton Toll. I've heard of Jonah Tong for a while, the way he's been dominating the minors. I dug into Toll a little bit, and he's pretty similar, high strikeout guy, putting up big numbers in the minors. So curious to see how they look. I couldn't be more impressed with McLean on the Mets, the way he's looked his first few starts. And I'd be curious, you know, if Tong goes out and shoves, what the Mets are going to do. Because, they have McGill coming back, and they already have a pretty full rotation. But if Tong is can pitch like McLean, I would think they're going to make room for him. I think at this point, this team wants to win, and it's going to go with their best five or six arms. So I guess it remains to be seen. But, two big strikeout arms coming up tonight. It should be a good night of baseball checking these guys out. Could make a very popular Fab Sunday for you.
Oh.
Looking forward to your article. I don't know how much money people have left to bid, but we'll have some targets, that's for sure.
Well, that's kind of the issue, is that a lot of people don't have the money to bid. You know, there's a faction of, you know, Mets fans who play NFBC or maybe other leagues that are just going to, if Tong shoves, and even if, you know, I mean, David Stearns did say he's doing it. He's evaluating it at a kind of one start at a time type of thing. But if he shoves, you just know Tong's going to get a bunch of love in the Fab this weekend. But you're right. People don't have a lot of money to spend. It's under $100 on average at this point. And we're going to need some money for the final 3 weeks too. We want to be able to grind it out. But I do think, this does kind of feel like the last sort of big spend. Tong has been the minor league leader in strikeouts in the minors, most of it in Double A, then come up in Triple A. But you mentioned it. I mean, this rotation is full. I mean, you got the two lefties, Minaya and David Peterson. Peterson's been excellent. Then you got the rookie you mentioned, Nolan McLean. Claim Holmes has been, he's been all right. He's been, managing and hanging in there all year. Kodai Senga still rocking the sub-3 ERA. And you're right, Tyler McGill is back. So there's a lot going on in that rotation. So, with him, and the same thing with Boston, that's kind of a wait and see as well. But on the onset, it does look like he might get a little bit of run here. We'll see how the weekend start goes as well. But, Peyton Toll continues through the rotation. He would get the Guardians at home next week, then at the A's, always a tough start, and then finally the second to last week of the season, if everything continues to line up and he pitches well and hangs in there, he'd get a two-step with the A's and Tampa. And then as far as Kyle Bradish is concerned, I mean, you know, this is a guy that was, you know, kind of had a rough rookie season. You know, he's 28 years old at this point. He really, you know, unfortunately, TJ set him back, or he's just been out for so long. But here he is. You know, you mentioned it. I mean, 10 strikeouts and six innings in his first start back. It's a dude that posted a 2.83 ERA in 30 starts back in his last full season in 2023. He's pretty good. As far as how his starts line up, it really just depends on, you know, I think I saw RotoWire had Tyler Wells, you know, potentially joining the rotation, trying to keep them on a six-man. And so they got Bradish kind of spread out. Like at, right now they have him, you know, if he pitches Monday on Labor Day, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like 7, 8 days of rest. I don't know if that's the case. So the way that I see it line up now, I don't think that's necessarily the way it's going to work out for Bradish. But either way, he's the top guy for me.
Yeah, I think that's right. He would be the top guy for me as well. But it's nice having options. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of players this weekend trying to figure out how much they can get by for the final 3 weeks. You know, much they can push it to keep those bids high.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, for those that play fantasy football, like I'm seeing so many, you know, sort of, you know, experts, analysts, high stakes players. I mean, football is a whole different animal, but a lot of guys that have never even made an actual play in the National Football League have very high ADPs. Like I'm seeing people like, you know, it's, you know, their third and fourth round picks are running backs that are rookies that have yet to play. Right. And, you know, it's the younger players have just been moving up, and the same thing in the minors. Like, you know, I mean, Boston's calling up all their young prospects. Like these guys seem to be coming up quicker, and a lot of them end up sticking. And then sometimes you even get gems. Like, I mean, you know, who really knew who Ryan Berger was, or, you know, Bergert, however you pronounce it, yeah, you know, heading into the season. So, you know, these guys are coming up out of nowhere. Listen, I'm proud of myself. I have a Parker Messick share, a couple of them in DCs. And I think he's like 12% rostered there. I mean, he was just like, just a guy in Cleveland who looks like a good prospect, but man, he's been incredible. Like all these rookies just come up and just shoving. So it's something to be said when we look at fantasy drafts next season.
Yeah, that's true. But then, you know, there's the other side of the coin where there's a lot of highly regarded prospects who come up and, you know, fall flat. You know, Lawler was one example, but there was a lot of love early on for Christian Campbell. People were doing victory laps with rostering him for the first month of the season. And he ultimately got sent down to the minors and hasn't been able to get back to the majors. So, I mean, there's a lot of players who, you know, who struggled the first time up. I mean, everyone knows baseball is hard. You know, what players do in the minors may give you some indication of their upside, but there's no guarantee they're going to get there real quickly.
A couple other guys I wanted to mention, see what your thoughts are on them. Luis Morales on the A's. So the A's lost Jack Perkins, Jacob Lopez is on the IL. And, you know, this kid, he's a good prospect there. He's got a live arm. He's also can be wild at times. We're very familiar with the profile, but the strikeout upside is great. He lines up for a road to start if everything goes as planned next week. Is that somebody you're looking at? And let's start with him before we go to some of the other guys.
Yeah, he's one guy that I managed to get last week.
Of course you did.
I missed out on Bieber and all my other top, and I won't take any credit too, because Morales was pretty far down my string. So I'm not doing any victory laps based on one good start. But in the case of Athletics pitchers, or road starts are probably more attractive than home starts. And so, you know, at St. Louis, at the Angels is not a bad two-step. I mean, there's definitely ratio risk, but if you're, you know, if you're looking to make up ground and strikeouts, I would throw that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then of course, we know the Angels, more strikeouts than any other team, at least in the American League, and definitely since the second half So in the Cardinals, of course, I mean, never know what team will come up. And if I'm not mistaken, Wilson Contreras is going to go on suspension here soon.
I know he's appealing. He was suspended. I guess it's not clear to me how quickly that's going to get resolved. It could be resolved at some point this weekend, but I don't know.
Look at me trying to make try to make things classy, like the old Luis Robert. I was trying to go Ryan Berger. It of course is not. It's like it essentially rhymes with like Go-Gurt, so it's like Burgert.
Burgert. Okay.
Yeah. Ryan Burgert. He is somebody that has been he's been outperforming his peripherals. He's got an ERA around, I think, somewhere around 2.5 since he joined that Royals rotation, but. The XFIP, the Sierra, it's a couple runs beyond that, closer like, four and a half. But his schedule, I think, lines up nicely, and obviously that's a good park for him. Do you have any of him, and then how do you feel about that, the case of rookies like him and, Luis Morales, guys that you haven't seen much of, and you're seeing them essentially like outperform their expected metrics? And in the case of Morales, by the way, a very, very low, very, very low BABIP, like a 99% strand rate, something like that. But like, guys like that, are you just like waiting for the other shoe to drop, or do you play it more matchup based?
I think you have to keep in mind that they're youngsters that there may be a big variance in performance. I had a couple shares of Burgert when he was with the Padres. I picked him up in time to get hammered by a lousy start, and then he got hurt, and I dumped him. I don't have any shares now, but when I took a look at it, when I was watching him pitch live, when I did have shares, I didn't find him to be all that impressive. So he was not high up on my strings this time around when he resurfaced with the Royals. So of course he's going to pitch well, but I don't know. To me, the elite pitchers are likely to do well, but some of these other pop-up guys, I just think they're very inconsistent, kind of like a Ben Brown type. I mean, like, he's just the example because he's the guy I've rostered in the past and have been very happy to drop. And, he's got a lot of skill. You can see that the stuff is good. But you just never know what you're going to get from start to start. And I think that's kind of my expectation with some of these guys. If it wouldn't shock me if Morales and Burgett had, a very good start next time out, but it also wouldn't shock me if they, gave up six runs in three innings.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And another guy to add to that list is Ian Seymour. So, I think even, it's probably even you say you're not a big prospect guy, but I know this is somebody that you've noticed, or whenever you've gone to like the minor league league leaders, he's always at the top in the ERA and the ratios. And he's 26. He's, I think Bob's brother and Carson, there's a bunch of Seymours there in the league, but Ian is the most talented of them all. And, over 27 starts last season, he posted a 2.35 ERA, a 2.62 this year. And then he got called up about a month and a half ago, was, kind of didn't have a rotation spot for him, but he'd been pitching 2-3 innings here and there. And then this past week, I kind of glazed over him. I wasn't really interested. I didn't think he'd get up there in innings, but he got it done. He pitched. He got a win. He threw only 67 innings. Pitches. But it got to five innings, only allowed one hit, only one walk, 8 strikeouts. And the guy looks good. And he's kind of got like a nice arsenal, lots of good off-speed offerings. So Ian Seymour is in the mix. His schedule, he's going to pitch this weekend, right? So I think this weekend and how he performs and how many pitches he gets up to, I think will play a role in, where he lands in these, tolls and tongs of the world.
Yeah, I think I took a look, and I think I unfortunately missed him in all or most of my bigger leagues. I had him in some strings, but I confess I did not prioritize him enough. When I got to look at him, I think he might be maybe a cut above some of these other guys like Morales and Burgett. I think his stuff is better, and he just kind of flew under the radar because he couldn't break the Tampa Bay rotation, which is, you know, kind of understandable. Everyone was waiting for Boyle to be called up, and that took like 4 months, you know, because they just ran healthy this season. But and so he came up and pitched in relief. So he was kind of, you know, didn't get maybe the attention he deserved as a minor league call up. But I think he, you know, based on his track record and what little I've seen, and it has not been much, he looks better than some of these other guys. If he's still available in folks' leagues, I mean, try to get eyes on him this weekend. But I would recommend including him in some bids.
Yeah, and the way it lines up for him is he would get the Guardians next weekend, and the following week, most likely the White Sox. And then if that all kind of, you know, continues, it would be a week 26, the third week of September, two-step, Toronto at home and Boston at home. Not ideal, but listen, this guy's, he's been in the minors, so I'm sure he's used to, you know, park like this.
Yeah, he probably pitched in it. Yeah. He should be very familiar with their home park. He's intriguing. If he's available in leagues, people should take a look at him.
All right, let's get a nice little rundown there. I want to wrap things up here, asking you about just like three one-offs. I was looking at, you know, the player rater over at Rasball, over at FanGraphs, and just it's always intriguing to me. Like, okay, wow, Geraldo Perdomo's moved up even more. Now he's like a first round value. You know, there's like, you have George Springer, all these, just like, it's just incredible how much the league changes year to year, how hard fantasy baseball is for, you know, really for everyone. That's why it's so impressive to see players like yourself and many others, like, just being so consistent year to year. So obviously there's something to it. But wanted to ask you here real quick, you know, two guys who have been like top six starting pitchers all year, both were targets for us. I don't think we got them everywhere. And then the price on one of them, specifically the one that went from the AL East to the NL West, really went up during main event season. And that's Nick Pivetta. So Nick Pivetta is rocking a 2.82 ERA, a 9.4 whip, a 20% strikeout to walk ratio. He's 13-4. And I wanted to ask you about him versus Brian Wu, who just, like, you know, you ever have that feeling like when, if you have a guy like Wu on your fantasy team, you're almost like, you know, like, oh, I got Wu going today. I'm good. Right. It's like that feeling, like you're just confident.
Yeah. You know, I hate to watch my starting pitchers pitch, but there's certain few ones that I enjoy and can just watch it in a relaxed state. And that's very few. But I will say that just to show how difficult this game is, I have zero shares of both of these pitchers. I did try to get Pivetta at times and just did not go up enough with the market as his price rose. And Wu, I just think, is a great example of how hard this game is, because in my off-season prep, when I was identifying injury risks, I had Wu at the top of my list. Last year, he missed, I think he had three different IL stints and missed starts because of forearm tightness and forearm injuries. And it just felt to me like he was a Tommy John surgery waiting to happen. So, of course, what does he do this year? He goes out and he pitches at least six innings in his first 25 starts. He just had one that was 5.2 innings, but he's been the most durable pitcher in baseball this year. So it just shows how impossible it is, I think, at times to predict pitcher injuries. But these guys are doing fantastic. I think if I had to, you know, and they're both getting a little lucky. I took a look. You know, Wu's got a 242 BABIP. Pivetta's is like 226. But they both are, you know, strong strikeouts. They're going deep into games. You know, you look at their situations. They both pitch for good teams. They both pitch in very good parks. And they both have very good bullpens supporting them. So they're well situated for continued success. Pivetta's now into his 30s, and I think between the two, I guess I give a little lean towards Wu. I love the incredible control. This guy has He's made now 66 starts in the major leagues, and he has a 1.00 whip for his career. And
incredible.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, that's elite. If you can get, you know, 150 innings from or more innings from a starter at a one whip, that just is a tremendous benefit. And I think Pivetta's, to give him credit, he used to have a fairly high walk rate. And this year he managed to hold the gains that he showed in 2024. So he's been very good in whip too. It's fantastic this year, but I think they're pretty close, but I would lean Wu going forward.
I'm doing the same, Mike. The one thing that's interesting in Pivetta, so this was one of the most clear as day things for me in the preseason. When he joined the Padres, I'm like, this is an absolute no-brainer. Let me draft as much as I can now when I can still get him in the 170s. Then it was like in the 150s, 140s, like while I can, because this is like too good to be true. This is a perfect scenario for him situation with the Padres. And you mentioned the walk rate. That's something he was in the 9% rate for so long in his career. And that last year in Boston last year, he got it down to 6%, 6.1, which is impressive. And he's in the sixes here, but the biggest difference in his game and what's where Petco's really helped him, or at least playing half his games there, his home runs are way down. I mean, it's around one for the first time in his career. I mean, last season it was 1.7 home runs per nine. The years before it was between 1.3 and 1.5. Like, it's just always, you know, a little below average, and he's just been dominant there. So it's great. But yeah, you look at things like xFIP, Sierra in relation to his ERA, it's much higher. He's definitely been a bit, lucky in that regard. And then the home road splits, it's always really telling. You know, it's a 2.23 wOBA at home, a 2.80 on the road. It's a 2.39 ERA at home. It's a 3.5 on the road, you know, things like that. So it just kind of, environment matters, ballpark matters. And that's why, when in doubt, give me that Seattle pitcher, give me the Gilberts, the Kirby's and the Woos, and I'm happy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that I agree with all of that, and great job by you getting the Pivetta shares when you did. It's worked out really well, and he's going to be there next year. And even if Robert Suarez leaves, they got Mason Miller now. They got a really strong bullpen behind him. So I think both of them are, with health. And Wu's not the only one who's had health issues in the past. Pivetta did for a number of years too. But they've both been healthy recently, and that's, I guess, all you can really ask for. They're both well situated for success next year.
Next one is also a couple of pitchers here. And they've been coming from different directions, because there was a time early in the season where like Jesús Luzardo looked to us like a lock stud, amazing. And now he's got a 4+ ERA, a 1.3 whip. He's the 64th ranked pitcher in player raters. Lots of strikeouts, 175 and 149 innings, but it all kind of shook us hard with that massive, how many earned runs was it even? I don't remember.
It was a lot.
It hurt. Yeah, it stung, and then I think he did it again, at least a little milder, but it still stung. And so, we're reeling a little bit from that. But I wanted to ask you about him versus, look at Edward Cabrera, a guy who was, Lizardo's always been he hasn't been a crazy, a control guy. He's always had, relatively decent control, not Woo Kirby-ish, but, league average. Edward Cabrera has been horrific in that respect. Over the last 30 days and several starts, this guy's got a 4.5% walk rate, 32% strikeout rate, like a 2.7 Sierra. Like, he's looked really good. How do you compare these two? I don't know if the prices will be similar, but how do you feel about them going into next year?
Yeah, they're both intriguing pitchers. They both have, clearly you watch them, they both have really good stuff. I talked about inconsistency earlier, and it's not limited to young pitching prospects. Luzardo has really run the gamut this year. At times he's looked unhittable, and other times it looks like he's throwing batting practice. There was stories that when he got hit really hard a couple months ago that he was tipping pitches. And so, I think that's something that's correctable. I don't know that it explains all of his weaker starts, but I think he did have some issue along those lines and got it fixed. I have a slight lean towards Luzardo of the two, but I think it's mostly because I'm not fully prepared to accept that this is the new Edward Cabrera. I mean,
yeah.
for years he's had just a really high walk rate. I refer to him as a whip killer. I will candidly admit that he's made appearances in each of the last 2 years in my various drop columns early in the year. And he's just always had a high walk rate. It's been close to 12% for his career. Anything like 10% or higher is a huge red flag for me, at least. I mean, I'd prefer it lower, but anything 10% or higher is a big red flag. Mm-hmm. And, looking into him this year, it's been, kind of a tale of two seasons. In the first half, March and April, he had a 12.2% walk rate. Went down to 7.5 in May, but then June was back up to 12.7%. And then the calendar flipped, and July was 3.4 and August was 6.3. But, I mean, this is a guy who, has had a lot of injury issues. Not that Luzardo hasn't. They both have. But at least Luzardo has, a 32-start season. He's up to 27 starts this year. Edward Cabrera just made his 23rd start, and that's the most he's ever had in the majors. And, the last two seasons, he had a whip of 1.44 and 1.37. So, it's been two very good months, very encouraging months. He has the stuff. If he could develop the control, then I think he could really have something there. And he's got a park advantage over Luzardo pitching in Miami, but I trust Luzardo more at this point. I don't know that Cabrera fully has the walk problem behind him, and Luzardo will be pitching for a better team. So a slight lean for Luzardo on my end.
I'm going to make it easy. And this is the beauty of fantasy, is you don't have to draft anyone you don't want to. And I have a feeling that I probably don't want to deal with either guy, to be honest. Like for me, we can be ratio snobs, definitely, like, that's the part that it's the biggest headache in fantasy, and it's so difficult to try to come back from and chase. And listen, if Edward Cabrera ends up being the same guy he was last year, sure, that's great, but I don't know. I have a feeling that price might be expensive. And then the Jesus Luzardo, that roller coaster ride is always just, really, really tough for me to stomach. But I'm with you. If I had a, slight lean, it would be Luzardo for me.
Yeah, they're both going to get their strikeouts, but I agree they're going to be at a pretty high price. And, if you start sacrificing ratios early, it could be a long season.
Let's end with this. I'm gonna throw out five outfielders, all within the same range of fantasy value, kind of like second round value at this point, or the second tier of hitters. And all of their numbers are close to one another. They've all, some have done it quieter, like J-Rod, for example, I'm going to bring up. Others have slumped hard, like Tucker, like PCA. Corbin Carroll has slightly, been, had his, sort of slumps, but the numbers are there outside of the batting average. And then Byron Buxton, phenomenal year. So I'm going to ask you, of those five guys, Julio Rodriguez, Kyle Tucker, Pete Crow Armstrong, Corbin Carroll, Byron Buxton, wrap this puppy up here with your sort of overall take on those guys. And if you had, say, the 18th pick in the draft, and we're looking at all five of those, say you had like a great pitcher to start, and you wanted one of these outfielders, who would be your guy and who's your avoid?
Okay. The avoid is easy. I would avoid Buxton. I don't put him in the same class as the other four on a going forward basis. I mean, he's having a tremendous season, and I think his skill level is comparable to the other four. But he's had enough seasons of massive missed time that I can't let one season of relatively good health kind of outweigh his career. And so I haven't owned Buxton in for so long I can't remember. And this is the first year I'm really regretting it. And if he does it again, more power to him. If the price is low enough next year, I would consider it, but I don't think he belongs in the first round or two. And frankly, I'd have all four of the other guys in the first two rounds. I think I like Carroll the best, power, speed, leadoff hitter. And then I would probably, I'd probably have J-Rod second and Tucker third, but it's close. And then I'd have PCA fourth. Just part of it is, you know, I think PCA has tremendous upside. You know, he's flashed great power and speed, but, you know, it's been in his kind of extended struggles this year is a good reminder. He doesn't make the best swing decisions. He still has a high strikeout rate. I think he, you know, can still struggle against tough lefties. And so I like the other four very much, but I would put PCA last. I'm pretty confident I'd have Carroll first. I think I lean J-Rod over Tucker. I mean, Tucker's now is getting older, has had a couple of injury spells. This prolonged slump is a little disconcerting. J-Rod's had it too. J-Rod, you know, starts every season weak and then comes on strong. But I guess I have more faith in his tools. So it would be Carroll for me, a close call, maybe J-Rod slightly over Tucker, PCA fourth, and Buxton a distant fifth.
Yeah, it's about getting lucky. Who's not going to get hurt that season, right? The one thing I'll mention, Julio Rodriguez, is he's gonna be one of those guys where it's like it feels like we haven't really followed him, right? Because people probably wonder, oh, how is he doing? You know, oh, he's not earning his value. He's absolutely earning his value. He's right there everywhere. He's the number 16 hitter. He's 24 homers, 25 homers, 24 stolen bases. He's on pace for, you know, 100 plus runs. Like, he's there. And it's just Cal Raleigh kind of overshadowing things and how well he's done. Of course, the home park, never great. I still got something with Tucker. I want to see where he's going to be next year. Maybe he comes at a little bit of a discount. Not quite sure. He's still got that name brand, but he's not a first rounder anymore, I think, after this year, unless he finishes incredibly strong and healthy. But, you know, these are all guys I like. You know, I think we have the automatic sort of, you know, inclination to stay away from Buxton, but he also has that massive upside, right? Like, you know, I mean, he's like outproducing Ellie and O'Neill Cruz and all these, you know, kind of flashy guys. I mean, he's getting it done. So that's the beauty of fantasy, right? Like, just so many ways to, I don't know. We need a new term for skin the cat, right? Because we shouldn't be skin the cat. But you know what I mean.
I think you hit it right on the nail on the head with J-Rod. I mean, I think he got off to a slow start and he's been heating up, but I think a lot of people have maybe missed it just because so much focus has rightfully been on Cal Raleigh having a historic season. People might not be realizing that J-Rod is really putting together a very nice season. And you're right about Buxton. I mean, the skill is right there with all of them. I mean, he's got tremendous power, and it's nice seeing him. I was going to say it's nice seeing him run again, but since I don't have any shares, it's not particularly nice to me. But yeah, it's nice seeing what he can do with a healthy season again.
Mike, this has been an absolute pleasure. As always, you know, love to have you on the show a few times a year. And I'm rooting for you. You know, I do not have any sweats in the overall in the main event. Maybe I'll get one of my teams up there. But right now, you're my guy. I'm rooting for you. Take down the auction overall champion for the second time in 3 years. Maybe catch that platinum winner. If not, listen, second place is pretty good. And I think your DCs will be okay. I think for some reason you'll bounce back in DCs, and maybe it won't be that big of a sweat if you win a couple of these big things.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it very much. It's always fun doing these with you. I have some very good teams, but I don't want people to think it's been, you know, better than it has been. I'm definitely having some teams struggling and disappointing, but I think that's probably the case with most people. It's, you know, some good ones, some bad ones. But yeah, going to try to finish strong. I hope you do as well. And I hope our listeners do as well. Now's the time to keep grinding. One more month to go. And, you know, anytime you think about relaxing a little bit, you my mind drifts back to all the leagues that I've either won or lost based on, you know, one home run or one stolen base or a win. And so, yeah, just do your best not to leave stats on the table.
Well, we'll have you back when we have that finale, the grand finale live show with all the winners and a couple of our FTN crew. So for Jason Anthony, for Mike Mager, I am Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.